Audio.
Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate.
But Matt Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Hero.
How you doing, Mike?
Then here we go. Greetings. Golan True. Kapla. Jambala.
Jolan True.
That's a new one I made up. All I know is Jolan True. That's all I know. Hello, everyone. Or the Vulcan hello, where we fire phasers at you. Hi. Or pulse cannons. Aren't they pulse cannons now in Discovery?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. As you described them, they're pew-pew.
Yeah, they're the pew-pews. Hello, everyone. My name is Mike McCafferty.
I'm Kim Miller.
And I'm Jason McCarris.
And we're just talking about Star Trek related things. I'm going to tease that out because there's a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. We got a lot of different things. It's like this is like a new golden age of Star Trek.
Wow.
Yeah, that's quite a statement.
No, it's so spectacular. I'm so happy about this. As I was walking up here to my spider-filled garage studio, I was just thinking, wow, there's so much Star Trek on right now, or Star Trek related materials on, that this is the golden age. We've reached it.
I count one and a half. I'd love to hear what the other ones are.
Well, that's it. That's all there is. And really, you have to figure out which one's actually more like Star Trek.
Good point.
But that's okay, because tonight we're talking about Star Trek Discovery.
Yes.
Episode 3, titled Kim.
The Context of Kings? Oh, crap. Context is for kings?
Context is for kings.
Ah, I was close.
Close, yeah. Titles are close. That's what the name of the show is.
Shoot, I can't find my phone. Oh, here it is. Continue.
All right, so we have Context is for Kings, and if we have some time, we're going to talk a little bit about the Orville's episode as well, which was titled, Kim.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know.
I don't think that was the title. Close.
For the Seth was hollow, and I have touched the family guy.
Exactly.
Jason, have you finished watching all of the Star Trek original series?
No, I still have maybe like 5 or 6 episodes in season 3.
Have you watched For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky?
I don't believe I have yet.
I'm oh, sure. Okay. Well.
Yeah, but you can spoil it.
Oh, don't. It already has been. Oh,
okay.
If the stars should appear, I knew that. Dang it.
If the stars should appear. Both of these episodes, I don't want to compare and contrast them too much, but both of them have quotes from great literary figures from like the 18th or 19th century, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly enough, Emerson.
I wanted to talk about this little, a bit tonight at some point. And I don't know. I don't want to interrupt what you're saying now, which I just did. Congratulations to me.
That's your thing.
Yeah, that's my thing. But I got annoyed with both shows constantly referencing, I mean, something I do on this podcast every week, old references. But we're talking hundreds of years before they were born. And when we're talking about, a central perk on Friends and the Beatles cover band, but not John Lennon. I'm like, really? I mean,
that bothered you popular. That much?
Well, just the constant flow of the old references. It's like, do people in the future really pay that much attention to the past? I mean, do we really talk about references to things that happened, 150 years ago, 200 years ago?
We sort of do,
Yeah, we did have a whole musical interlude last week with Neil Diamond.
Well, that's not 200 years ago, Tom.
Might as well be to anyone under 50.
Well, that was during our lifetime.
Well, your point is well made, and it is very much part and parcel with Star Trek to reference mysteriously the exact decade in which we're watching the show, or a couple before.
Right.
So, and then maybe throw out one beyond us just to kind of keep it, it all okay,
So, yeah, I'd love that if there was more of those weird references that we've never heard of. Like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. We haven't got there yet.
Well, they do that. I mean, every once in a while, they'd be like, Einstein and Z Magni. And, there's like, oh, who's that?
Yeah.
But yeah, there were quite a few references to to some of this stuff.
We're mixing and matching. What show are we talking about?
Both. Let's talk about Discovery.
Simultaneously? Yeah. Madness.
No, we're going to talk about Discovery. Let's talk about Discovery, baby. Let's talk about you and...
Old reference number one.
Old reference. Kim, keep us in line. Keep the spores down. Hurry.
Look, I became an astromycologist for one thing.
Wow. Anthony Rapp is going to win a Tony for that speech. Because that was a monologue from some play, wasn't it? It just kept going.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, he was fine, but that thing never stopped.
Well, yeah, but his character also was just sort of like, you know, twirling the mustache a little bit for no reason. You know, he's not a bad guy, but he still like ribs her every chance he gets and, you know, calls her names and stuff. And you're like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So just to give you a little backup here, this is sort of our hot take here. We just watched it, first watch, you know, so we're a little rough on the edges here, of course. We're telling you this like 15 minutes into the podcast, but who cares, right?
Who cares? Well, I actually liked the episode of Discovery a lot. I think at a certain point, it definitely jumps the shark quite a bit. I don't know for the series, but at least for the episode.
Mm-hmm.
When they end up on the ship and there's an alien running around and it becomes like a horror movie. At that point, everything started to come downhill a little bit for me. I just felt like they totally switched gears. Because at the beginning, I kind of loved, you know, it's 6 months after the events that we saw in episode two. And she's a prisoner on this ship. But the whole idea of the alien insects or whatever that are taking electricity away. And I loved that. I loved all that kind of stuff. And then leading up to it and her getting back on the ship, all that was great.
I love the pilot flying weird past the window.
Yeah.
that I did appreciate.
Do you think they got her? Do you think like they were like,
I was wondering that.
Yeah. I mean, if she was kind of a real bitch, they'd be like, oh no, this was an unmanned pilot shuttled thing. You know, it's just us. Are you sure there wasn't a pilot? Just us.
Yeah. It is pretty weird that they never referenced it because they probably could have picked her up pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm hoping they did. I'm hoping that's one of the things they did.
A little odd that she was wearing her EV suit as she's sitting at the control. I gotta go out and get it. She's already dressed. All right.
We all live close to the ocean. We always wear scuba gear. That's very important, right? Whenever I go for a drive, I'm always wearing my scuba gear. All right. Well, so, Kim, what did you think overall about this episode?
Oh, crap. You caught me right when I took a bite.
Oh, my God. We waited for like 20 minutes
for Uber Eats to show up.
Yeah. And now
Mike specifically asked, are you going to be eating during the podcast? No, of course not.
You guys usually talk so much that I have a lot of time to kill.
Oh, that's a burn. Kim.
Oh, yeah. I heard.
It's a good burn.
Yeah.
What was your question? What did I think? I had a lot of problems with it immediately.
Okay.
The idea that these prisoners are allowed to eat in the main mess hall without any sort of like handcuffs. I'm like, what? Weird. I thought these were all dangerous criminals.
Yeah.
That just made me go, what is that? These leaps of logic kind of bother me. I like that Lorca has a tribble that's not mentioned. And it's heard, but it's not pointed out.
Yeah, it's just sitting there, on his desk.
Then again, I'm like, what? Pre-TOS? What?
I know. He has a pre-TOS tribble at his sort of game show counter there.
Well, it was sort of a tease for when at the end you see that he keeps game a lot of weird-ass creatures. And, you know, he's sort of a Dr. Moreau of sorts that we didn't realize.
Yeah, he has a Gorn skeleton there. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Oh, I noticed. Very well lit. I didn't realize it was a Gorn skeleton.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Well, it's like a human skeleton with a Gorn skull on top of it. It's very. I guess there was some Cardassian voles or something like they called them. Someone picked that out. So Dr. Island Dr. Moreau is a very good reference because it's he is definitely a collector of rare and unusual animals.
Oh, okay.
He reminded me a little bit of the guy from Up, the bad guy from Up, played by Christopher Plummer, Star Trek alumni.
I don't remember.
Like the guy in the big Zeppelin who collected all those those animals, and he was looking for the weird peacock thing.
Oh yeah.
All right.
He reminded me a bit of the governor from Walking Dead. with his aquarium with heads.
That does kind of harken back to that a little.
Well, if there's one thing, I mean, in my estimation of the show, I mean, it's a very exciting space show right now. It's better than the first two episodes, which are basically disposable at this point in time. We could have just shown up here and been like, I screwed up 6 months ago. I'm
started vilified. The Clone War.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'd be like, oh, great. I don't need to. I don't need to see any of that. That's fine.
I thought of what you had said when I was watching this episode. I'm like, yeah, this would have been a great point to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is it. My friend Kenny pointed out that this is exactly how Rogue One started, basically.
Yeah, no, I was having the same thought. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, basically, and then to continue that, they get kind of a ragtag group of people to go someplace and they get attacked. So it's, but the thing that bothered me the most, I know we're going backwards and all over the place here, is Captain Lorca is right at the very end is evil.
And didn't like it's, that.
Well, I mean, Alex Kurtzman wrote this, or, you know, as part of this, and it's a very Losty kind of thing. It's a very, the end of the show, everything you thought you knew is now twisted around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine for other shows, but this is Star Trek, and we're supposed to go depend upon our main cast to be good guys. And
yeah, that was a little surprising, like a biological weapon that's explicitly against the Geneva Accords or whatever.
Well, but then that wasn't supposed to be, and then it was, right? So, like, she said no, and then, like, he ended up capturing that big, you know, weird water bear thing, whatever that was. So, yeah, a tardigrade, whatever that thing's called. So that like...
I did get the sense that it seems like a little bit of a bait and switch, though. Like, they seem to indicate this guy's... There's something that's very wrong there, and he's probably evil, but I think what's going to come around is he's not... There's got to be some sort of explanation for what he's doing, although it might just be that he's like the governor, but I doubt it.
Nah.
I don't know. I mean, that first image where he's like, I need the lights low. You know, I mean, like,
right.
Okay.
Well, I thought to myself when, and maybe I'm reading too far between the lines, but when he had that problem with his eyes from the battle and the light explosion, it was probably from what we saw in, what was it, the first episode or the second episode, when there was that blinding light that came through the bridge, and they had to put up the barriers and everything, and they could still see it. Yeah,
that's possible. That is very possible. I mean, it's possible he could turn out to be misunderstood and be a good guy, but already he's very, very, a very gray character.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jason Isaac, he's not known for playing nice guys. He's a great villain. He's a villain in Harry Potter. He's a villain in The Patriot and so many other movies, and he's great at
the
it.
The OA.
Yeah, Patriot.
Yeah, the OA, of course.
The OA, he's a real weirdo there.
Yeah.
I really liked him in this episode.
I liked him, too. I thought he was great. Yeah. I there's so much about this that I like, and it's the little things that popped out that made me dislike it. But in whole, I enjoyed this episode a lot more than I did the first two.
Yeah, me too. The fortune cookie thing, though, I was like, it seems like, hey, Chinese market, hey, look what we got for you. I'm like, well, fortune cookies.
He had one in his pocket
at the end.
20th century reference coming back again, much like Alice in Wonderland, another 19th, 20th century reference.
Yeah, that's true. It did seem a little kind of like you're saying the governor kind of thing, where he has his weird eccentricities that are not understood, but define him in some way. You know, I mean, his whole setup became weirder and weirder.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
creepy eyes,
and then he has a strange museum of stuff. Like, what the hell is that? And then his security officer is also in it too. So already from the top down, it's rotten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe Burnham is going to, you know, change all that.
I guess we have to wait and see, because I certainly didn't expect to enjoy this episode more than the first two. Because I thought, oh, I guess this is kind of the path we're on. It's going to be sort of average. And I thought this was a little better than average, but still had a lot of problems.
Yeah, it certainly is a soft reboot of the entire idea. It's certainly – those two episodes are completely disposable. They took some of the cast members and just started over again.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, now we have 13 episodes, which is probably why they went from 13 to 15. Because they originally had a 13-episode commitment, and then they went to 15. They probably said, we need two more to actually make this work. And they said, okay, go do that. But yeah, I mean, it's an exciting science fiction show. Will it eventually become Star Trek? I don't know.
Well,
but
they did have a reference to Spock in this episode.
yeah. Very... My brother and I. What?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, someone didn't actually say that. She said it was her adoptive parents and their son or something like that. It was kind of less familial than that.
As little as we can hint around that we're going to see Spock at some point in time in this.
I saw a little bit of the After Trek show. I haven't watched the whole thing, but the writer, producer of the episode had said that that was very intentional because as writers, they've been thinking a lot this season about what it was like growing up in the Sarek household. Mm-hmm. So I guess we have to – wait, who's drinking now?
That was me, sorry.
So tasty.
I'm going to walk around with a bowl of blueberries because what I do.
Sure.
Can you imagine Riker walking around eating a bowl of blueberries?
It made me think of two different things, which was weird. I guess that alien species had to figure out at some point what of these weird plants that we know about on Earth actually work in their system when they eat it. And then secondly, the thing that they were talking about where it's being, what do you call it? When they just matter the food into being. What's that called again?
The replicator.
The replicator, yeah. When these foods are just replicated, they're all the same, right? I don't know. Maybe they have a name brand replicator.
What do you mean?
KitchenAid.
Well, that was what they were referencing in the show, right? Like the blueberries all taste the same, but in prison they tasted different to her because it was a mental thing.
Oh yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah. I kind of glossed over that a little bit. I was just kind of.
Were you watching this show?
Yeah, I'm watching the show, but I'm way more than who you were, Jason. I didn't spend as much time on the blueberries. I wasn't that concerned about the blueberries.
Jason's very worried about the blueberries.
I'm very concerned about these blueberries.
Actually, I was looking at Saru's face during one scene and seeing his teeth inside.
I was looking for that and I didn't see it.
You didn't notice.
I saw his teeth inside and it was disconcerting because I was like, is that on purpose? CG that out? Or just like this, do they have like gigantic lips and teeth inside? Oh,
I was really wondering about that because they show on the After Trek show as well, they show the makeup process of them putting him into makeup and all that kind of stuff. So I was looking for the teeth and I didn't. So I'll have to watch again and look for it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Saru. Saru reappears in this episode.
Mm-hmm. He's promoted.
What's that?
He's promoted as well.
He's promoted. Yeah, now he's first officer, and Michael is a prisoner.
Right.
He's a very interesting character. I am enjoying him more and more, I think.
Yeah.
I still don't understand quite what it means when his little whiskers stand out.
I don't know. But.
When he thought that she had left on the prison shuttle and his little whiskers stuck out, like, what does that mean? He's sad?
I wasn't 100% either, but I thought maybe he was sensing death and maybe those prisoners on the ship are going to die at some point.
Oh. Yeah, or is it that because she's on the ship still, there's death here?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that could be.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what those mean? I sense death.
Well, that's kind of the only thing we really learned about his character, really.
Yeah.
He likes blueberries.
He likes blueberries. Sure. Everyone likes food in this show, right? You know, the blueberries taste weird, and there's fortune cookies, and there's replicator food.
So one of the things that bothered me early on was like, okay, she's brought onto the ship, and then she's ordered to help technically with her technical knowledge, but then no one tells her what to do, or everyone resents her. Mm-hmm. Like, why did he give her that assignment, and then... Here, you go over here, and then no one there is willing to say, okay, here's what we need you to help with. Also hostile and confused, and I'm just like, what?
Yeah, well, so let's dial it all the way back, because I agree with you on that. Let's kind of like run through the episode a little bit, because it is as good as the show is, and as good as the special effects are phenomenal. It looks great. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of inconsistencies which pop up. Because we start on this prison ship, like you said, with these like weird, like everyone's weirdly handcuffed instead of force fields. I don't understand what's going on there. This strange, like three people we think we're going to see more of, and we do, and then they're gone. Right? I mean, they just kind of pop up. Mm-hmm. Just so we can kind of paint the backstory of Michael Burnham, which we already know because we watched the first two episodes. We know how that's going to turn out.
Yeah.
And then they kind of get saved by the Enterprise. There's like little bugs eating the ship. Like, why? Who cares about those bugs? Why are those? Like, why are we? Why is that a thing?
You mean on which ship? On the prisoner
ship? On the shuttlecraft.
On the shuttle.
Well, because they all would have died, right?
Yeah, but like, why are they even going through like a nebula with bugs? You know, I mean.
But that was addressed later on in the episode, right? Because those were part of. Didn't that have something to do with the spores?
No, I don't think the same. I think they were just some weird organism that they had.
I thought it was a little weird because when Anthony Rapp puts that little canister thing in the wall and he dusts himself off and like the dust was kind of weird. It was almost like the little bug sort of. And then there was something they addressed later. I thought that it made it a little clearer that the reason they ran into those bugs was because it had something to do with the Enterprise or whatever it's called. The Discovery. Yeah. Yeah. that thing, the space thing.
That big space thing out there.
Yeah, anyway, I could be reading between the lines there, but I thought there was a connection between them dealing with these spores and those.
Maybe it didn't occur to me at the time.
I noticed, and I thought this would bug the crap out of you guys, is this introduction of the captain being able to talk to the computer and then it transports them to different parts of the ship.
Yes.
Okay.
Site to site transport. What?
Yeah, that was suddenly Scotty's out of a job. O'Brien's out of a job. They're all fired. All right. So I think either way, the fact that we have questions about these space bugs, whether or not they're related to the fungus, is a little bit weird. But they get saved by the nick of time. Now, here's the other thing, too, is we have Michael Burnham and she's all of a sudden this dour kind of, you know, like
hard ass.
It's over. I don't care. And we've seen that character a lot. And I know it's like a badass thing to see, but I don't know if I wanted to see that much, you know?
You really want the upbeat side of Star Trek, I think. You're very much an optimist. I like the dark stuff, but I can see your point.
Well, I think that, we'll get into the Orville, but I think that's what is very appealing to Mike, too, is the fact that it's very much like the old series where they're faced with a problem and it's, you know, solved by the end of the episode. And it is much more lighthearted.
I guess you're right. And I guess ever since Lost, you know, 17 years ago, or however long it was that it started
17
off.
17?
When did it start?
2006? 2005?
Lost was in 2006?
Well, it ended in 2009, something like that. I think it started in 2004, 2005. So it's like 11, 12 years ago.
Well, still, I mean, it started in 2004. So that's 13 years ago. Someone's looking this up. I know that. But we've had 13 years of serialized mystery at the end of the episode, dark characters, dark intent. And so I'm kind of ready for a little bit of a palate cleansing. So
I mean, you can go back to, I would say, if you want to go before that, why am I blanking? Alias, with, you know, another J.J. Abrams show was serialized and started that probably 5 or 6 years before Lost.
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
It was great in the beginning. Then it really kind of went off the tracks.
Yeah, okay. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about Discovery.
This show is, I just want to talk about Alias.
Yes. all right, so Michael Burnham, she's brought aboard the ship, and they are sequestered away.
They get to go out into the mess hall and eat with everybody.
Yeah, good that's point. Right, yeah, they get, they're sequestered they can start away to the mess hall.
And they get roommates, too.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So they're in the mess hall, and everyone's staring at her because she is the scourge of the Federation. Yeah, which will be forgotten in 10 years during the episode of the Tholian Web when Spock says that there's never been a recorded mutiny in Starfleet.
That's why you're the host, because you remember these things.
maybe they struck it from the record somehow.
Could be.
Jason.
But then again, here's my counter argument. Are you ready for it?
Yes.
Michael Burnham is Spock's adoptive sister.
Oh kitty.
So
kitty barfed again. Oh no.
Oh Jesus. She's barfing. Your cat is barfing because of the logic holes in this.
Hold on. Continue.
The cat sensed those logic holes.
And I did not figure that myself. That was from Reddit. But
let's listen to Kim. clean up after the cat puking.
Oh, yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Me. Gross.
Excellent podcasting.
You might listen to Trek FM, and they have a lot of podcasts, but you're never going to hear a cat barf.
You're never going to hear spiders run through a room.
Nope.
Or cats barfing.
Cats barfing. This is the second time we've had cats barfing on this podcast.
Oh.
It looks like she's, sounds like she's getting something.
No, it sounds like she's going to attack.
Getting something to clean up with, I think.
Yeah.
All right, so let's keep anyway. On going. So anyway, so they go into the mess hall. Instantly, there's a fight because, I don't know, convicts fight.
She's back.
Yes. We waited.
Talk about that mute button one of these days.
That may be the best thing about this podcast, Kim.
I can't just let it sit there until we're done because yuck.
As you were saying, Mike.
Oh, I was saying that they go to the mess hall and the convicts then decide to attack Michael Burnham because whatever, right? Because she's by degrees, I guess, like do convicts attack mutineers? I mean, is that sort of the thing? Is that, you know?
Well, they sort of establish that she's like the most famous person in the universe now because she's the only, you know, mutineer in Starfleet.
Except to Spock. Spock was going to forget about that.
Or maybe you know, mess with the records because it's his adoptive sister and, you know, clear it from the records.
I guess. But, I mean, if everyone knows who she is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in 10 years from now, people are like, Kirk's going to know.
Well, her roommate certainly right now is who she was, right? Like, I've never heard of any girl named Michael except for that one Michael who's the most famous person in the universe for being a mutineer. That's not you, though, is it?
Well, let's get to that character. Well, I can't remember. What is her name? Her name is
Tilly.
Tilly. Yeah. At first, very, very irritated by her. a little too much. But then I'm okay with her. I'm okay. Kim?
Really? Okay. I just kept thinking she's dead. I'm going to be a captain someday. She's dead.
Oh, yeah.
But I think she actually, I know, I'm getting the sense that she actually becomes like a main character. Maybe. You know, good friends with.
She might, yeah.
I thought for sure when they send a cadet on a dangerous away mission, she's dead. But no, she survived.
Well, as they pointed out in the after trek, she's the one who spotted the Klingon on the ship, which is, that was all weird too. The Klingon is shushing her.
Oh my God. I don't know
the human convention of shh.
Yeah,
come out and go. Rah! Maybe in Klingon, rah means be quiet.
And why did we need Klingons in that sequence, anyways? I mean, is that monster not enough?
Well, I think maybe it was to kind of, you know, throw the audience a little bit and think, oh, well, it was a Klingon attack, and then suddenly you switch it up, and there's a monster who's actually attacking the Klingons too.
Yeah, kind of but those humans were just like completely like sucked away. I mean, they were just, there's nothing to them.
They were like spiraled or something.
Yeah, it was really weird. I have to go back and look at that, but that was pretty.
And then
cool,
they mentioned
actually.
Something about like the same kind of marks that were on the human beings were on the ship when it got into the ship somehow. So I'm thoroughly confused as to how that thing got on the ship because it had just come from outer space and can breathe and then like bit through the
question.
Ship.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was my thought was that it was somehow created, like it's like a fungal growth or something.
Yeah,
I don't know what
you're
is.
Probably right because they were. I mean, that was the whole thing.
He did want to keep it at the end, right?
Yeah. Well, not just that, but the whole conversation with Anthony Rapp, where he was talking to them about what they're doing and
science,
and trying to, you know, they're experimenting and are you sure you can do that? Yeah, we're sure. Kaboom.
Yeah, that guy with the weird, his face coming out of
the three-dimensional FaceTime.
So how did you feel about the whole astromycology speech?
Oh,
it
Anthony
sort
Rapp's.
Of explained his hostility to her a bit, but.
It did, and it's fine. It was such an information dump. Like, I didn't mind it, but it was so long. And I just wanted like someone to break that up, like, you know, oh, here's your reports. Oh, sorry, I'll come back when you're done talking. You know, I mean,
There was also that whole conversation they had on the ship heading out towards where they found the Klingons, where they were talking about the difference between organics.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, is that the same conversation? I thought, yeah. Because when you mentioned the monologue, I thought you were talking about something earlier.
I was talking about the one where they were in the engineering room.
Right.
And he just kind of lays into her over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I meant that was a long shuttle. After he's told that Saru thinks that she is the best officer, the smartest officer they've ever had, and he's still so sarcastic with her. Oh, you want to show everyone how smart you are? He's like, she is smart. Why are you so defensive? That didn't quite.
It's like, actually, I do.
She's there to help.
Here's the gag too, where they're like, and he knows you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's something I'll bring up about that smartness, which may be controversial, but I've heard the term Mary Sue bandied around with some female characters.
Certain female characters.
What well,
like
mean?
Like Rey from Star Wars?
Like Rey from Star Wars. And there are parts of Michael Burnham in this episode which remind me a lot of that.
What is that again?
A Mary Sue is someone who shows up, especially a female character, who shows up, who knows everything.
Right.
She can drop into the situation. Everything she suggests is right, and she basically shows up the regular cast and saves the day.
Yeah.
So there's no real conflict because she's good at everything, and thus there's no danger that she's ever in.
Does that still apply if she's a regular member of the cast, or is that just
I don't know, an
unexpected character pops in?
No, I think we're talking about main characters mostly.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's a main character who shows up who basically is like a Superman as far as like having all the answers to everything. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, she kind of did. Am I right or no? Am I off on this?
I think they established previously her training, especially, and her past on Vulcan and the kind of things like I don't think, like when she got in a fight with those guys, the ridiculous fight in the commissary, that there was some basis for that. Right. I mean, because she was trained in Vulcan. We kind of know that. I guess there's a little more leeway with somebody with like Rey, who is just a mystery person. We don't know her background, but she, can fix anything, speaks Wookiee and, handles a lightsaber and does mind tricks all of a sudden. I get that criticism. I think there's more to that story that we're going to learn. But I kind of can understand the criticism. I don't necessarily agree with it totally, but I can see it in the case of Rey way more than Michael. But I mean, what kind of things do you think she knew or did that weren't really kind of justified?
Well, I think, she rolls into the situation. She, basically on the shuttle, she knows exactly what's happening, right? In the mess hall, she beats up everybody because she has Vulcan powers. She's assigned to do something very, very difficult. Like by deprogramming that computer, she does it. She figures out this guy who's been working on it for months or years. She's like, oh, you have this problem, this problem, this problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She sees that there's a secret doorway that needs a breath analyzer.
Right. I was just a breath analyzer. Yeah.
We're going to save that for a bit. And then she gathers spit. Yeah. She gathers spit from someone to get in.
Cleaner that you use for your keyboard and be like,
yeah, just kind of like shop vacs it. and then even like to defeat that giant monster, she knows exactly what to do and drops exactly into the shuttle door at the exact moment while reciting Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass.
Well, her memorized passage from Alice in Wonderland,
which we didn't know she was going to do and was not earned in any way. So, those are the things I had problems with.
Pretty much everything she did in the episode.
Some of the things you mentioned, I think, like when she points out the code to him and how it's an error and she's, she knows the difference. I think there's also an element of, I know that I don't know what this is and I don't understand what this is. And you're not telling me because you're not telling me, I don't understand. That's kind of at least a little bit of failure on her part before she can go, but I know that's wrong. Because she knows some things, doesn't know others. She's not perfect,
No, she's not. But she found a flaw in his programming that he hadn't seen.
Right. Well, because they are saying she's the smartest, or at least, Yak Face, whatever his name is, the guy. He said she's the smartest person ever met in Starfleet.
Saru.
Saru.
Which which in Japanese means what, Kim?
Saru means monkey.
Kim's mom appreciated that very much.
Yeah, she was very happy about
that. My mother watched this episode while Anthony Rapp was doing his whole speech. I said to myself out loud, I go, what? What does that mean? My mom goes, you're asking me? Very funny. But I think one of the most bizarre, unexplained things that Burnham does in this episode, she keeps saying how she wants to get back to the shuttle and she just wants to be a prisoner and serve out her sentence. Then why does she go to all the trouble of stealing that girl's drool, vaporizing it, and breaking into that restricted area? I mean, doesn't she know that that's only going to cause her more problems? I mean, you said you don't want to get involved in any of this. Why are you trying to find out more?
Yeah, she gives a speech about, like, I just want to be, I want to stand up for the principles of Starfleet, even though I mutinied and knocked out my captain. But aside from that, I want to stand up for the principles of Starfleet. But I am going to break into this place using my roommate's spit.
So it's which a little... can translate to breath somehow.
Yeah,
he vaporized it, I guess.
With her compressed air canister.
Yeah, it was a little, which was in a little, a little container right next to her. Just pop that out. And evidently she has free run of the ship, right?
Yeah, I really was kind of weirded out by her. Before she did the breath thing, she walked into another room where there was a guy, right? And she grabbed something, a canister or something.
I thought that was
right
in the same
before
room.
She did the breath thing.
I don't remember.
And I'm like, that guy didn't say anything about her just walking right up to the station and like doing something.
He was like, he was typing away and she walks in. He doesn't turn around. He's on the night shift and she just kind of walks in, grabs a little hypo spray and, psst, and gets in. And then just sees a bunch of like fungus.
Yeah. We're going to have to talk about the spores at some point, too, because I'm very confused.
Yeah, that whole spore scene where he puts her in that chamber and transports her around the galaxy is like,
puts her in the molecule chamber. Yeah.
Molecule chamber.
Takes away your powers.
Superman 2, yeah.
Trying to get them into the
that molecule chamber.
Well,
don't do it, General. It's a trap.
We're this close from doing a Superman 2 podcast. I'll tell you that right
now. Oh, I would be so happy.
These people do these podcasts where they do 1 minute, one podcast per minute of a movie.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them. Yeah,
that's kind
of
cool. I like that idea.
We could do that at Superman 2. We could dive into that. Oh my God, I'd be so happy. But we're not here to talk about that.
No.
You bang your keyboard, we can all hear.
I know. Well, that's the idea. All right, so. I don't know if we want. I mean, like, so they go on the ship eventually on the kind of the ghost ship, with spooky, scary stuff. Mm-hmm. The big monster chases them around, right? Mm-hmm. Are we missing anything important out of that?
They try to download the logs, but they're corrupted or something.
Okay.
So what do they get from that landing party?
I don't know. I guess they
did
just
they
got
bring
the big...
anything back.
Well, they got the giant the monster. That's what they got back. A tardigrade. Mm-hmm. That's what I was looking for. They're also called water bears. These are little tiny creatures which can live in almost any environment. And this thing looks a lot like a tardigrade.
Oh yeah, it was actually in
Orville.
No, I was going to say in
Cosmos.
Cosmos. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? Seth MacFarlane loves tardigrades because he mentioned it in the article.
We did?
He said, yeah, very briefly. He said, we spliced some DNA from a tardigrade into the blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, Seth.
Is that like in the first episode or the second one?
I think it was in the second episode.
Okay. Well, this one looked like, at least in the face and in like the giant body size. So that might be a clue too. We'll see.
Yes, and he spliced redwood seeds with tardigrade DNA to create super trees.
Oh, there we go.
When it exploded, and everybody,
So tardigrades are fascinating because they're almost invulnerable. They're tiny little creatures that can survive like hundreds of years without water or air. They can live out in space. They're crazy.
they're well known to be crazy.
And crazy. Well, we saw that one. Just chasing everybody around, eating Klingons. Come on.
But did you follow the whole discussion about spores and how they are the muscles and veins of the universe?
Yeah, I heard that.
I may need to watch that again several times.
No, no, I got it. I knew exactly what they were doing. They were laying some very strong groundwork for stuff which we're never going to hear about again.
Oh, really?
No, we have an astromycologist on board. We're going to hear about it.
Well, at least we figured out why he's so important, right?
Yeah.
Did he discover midichlorians?
Quit crying and inject Star Wars and everything.
It's only Superman 2 or Orville, Jason, okay?
All right.
Raiders of Lost Ark.
A little bit of Raiders. So this is the big conceit of this season, I believe, is that they have introduced this idea that the whole universe is bound together via fungal networking.
Spores.
Spores. Via the spores, which like are like threads across the universe. Right?
All right.
We're all buying that, right?
It seemed to transport her from the
molecule chamber.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you just kind of like throw some spores into a room and press a button and you're everywhere.
Well, see, it would have been really interesting if they somehow were able to, I mean, I'm sure this would be kind of like midichlorians and explain too much, but if they were able to kind of wrap that into how transporters came about or something, and that's how they're able to transport material back and forth is because they harness the power of these things. But to just have this technology readily available and be like, well, yeah, and we can also transport via these spores.
Kind of weird. Yeah. It is, I mean, it is
spore
such a
me
drop. Spore me up, Scotty.
Well, how is this going to fit into the whole Klingon war? How are we going to defeat them by popping in, pew, 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 pop out?
I guess, yeah.
What was that? Right, not nothing.
Does someone smell mushrooms? Like sautéed mushrooms somewhere.
Why is
get
there
out of here?
Who left this fortune cookie?
Fortune cookie monster?
Just leave one behind. Is it? Mafia signal.
Right, yeah. I do have to say that the actual effect of that was really cool. I mean, it was like a cool, weird effect. And the idea, although it's insane, has something interesting about it. It's kind of a magical, like, this is a new thing we got. So I'm kind of not on it, but it looked cool enough that I was like, all right, spores, I guess.
How did you like the final conversation? I really liked her final monologue to him saying, here's why you brought me on board. Because you know that I'm a mutineer. And he said, because you made the right decision back in the Battle of the Binary Star.
Right. Yeah, I guess. I mean, that was
too dark.
It is too dark. That's the thing. I mean, people are saying already, like on Reddit, like, oh, this is like Deep Space Nine. But with Deep Space Nine, with the exception of like one significant moment with Benjamin Sisko, which was deep into this, like the fifth season or sixth season in The Pale Moonlight, where he makes a strong, difficult moral decision to save billions of people by having one person die. This, like, we're starting out of the box, episode 3, with a corrupt Starfleet. So we are basically saying that this mutineer is somehow better than this corrupt Starfleet. And it's just these two negatives that we're trying to turn into some sort of positive situation. Mm-hmm. That's what bothers me. No one has any sort of moral center except maybe Saru eating blueberries. I mean, he seems the only guy who is like, who has a virtue to him, a nobility to him that I can follow.
Mm. Okay. I can see that.
Well, I mean, are you kind of referencing Lorca's ideal too, where he's kind of like universal laws for lackeys and context is for kings, which is the title of the episode.
Well, that, I mean, he's justifying stuff. And I mean, right. In that speech, that was fine. I actually liked that. That was a good speech. It's like, oh, yeah, I mean, we have to win this war, and I'm going to do whatever I need to do. That's fine. But then we have this kind of sinister...
But there does seem to be a very sort of differentiation between him and, like, a Kirk character where, you know, Kirk would sometimes bend the rules, but ultimately, you know, the prime directive and all the stuff from Starfleet was, you know, Bond.
Yeah, Kirk would bend the rules heavily, but it was always... I mean, it was never with a duplicitousness,
right?
You know, where he is actively like moving chess pieces of lower crew members without telling them what's going on. He did it once in the Enterprise incident. That was the only time he really fooled his whole crew for a somewhat sinister motive. Not sinister, but it was like, it was a covert motive.
Mm, yeah.
It was, you saw that one, right, Jason?
Yes,
it was,
I did, yeah.
It was to steal the Romulan, you know, cloaking technology.
Right.
And only him and Spock knew it. This, like, and again, third season, to some degree, earned. This one, it just, and as you guys know, we've been watching The Orville, and that one just reminds me of the nobility and the virtue of the Next Generation. How they would never do anything like this.
Yeah.
So, do we have any final thoughts about Discovery before we do a little mini Orville podcast?
I liked not seeing the Klingons in this episode, except for that one guy.
Except for that guy. Mr. Shusher.
And a quick side note, I watched some behind the scenes things where they were talking about the design behind the Klingon costumes and the ships and stuff. And did you see that? And that one guy said something like, oh, every aspect that you see has meaning. And it just sounded like way too many cooks. Like nobody ever said, are we going a little too far overboard? Isn't this a bit much? It's just so much design upon design upon design upon design. It just,
that's a hat upon a hat.
It could
just
be.
Just so much, too much for what we think of as the Klingon culture. I think I mentioned this last week, and just so ornate and frilly. It's just so frilly. Much. So Baroque and too much design. Like in graphic design, you need white space just as much.
Need a little negative space there to kind of, you know, give us a little bit of a break. It kind of, again, with all the effort they put in to making a costume for the Klingons, the fact that they can't track that in the Tholian web, Spock says there's never been a mutiny in recorded history of Starfleet, except for 10 years ago when my adoptive sister did that. That's something that someone should be checking out more than if we should put more beads on a Klingon's shirt. You know, I mean.
Or beads.
Listen, Toyota Tacoma had plenty of beads.
Yes,
like,
he did.
Even the facial prosthetics are so much now that the actors can barely talk, it seems like. You just hear burr, 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 like your Larson Bator impression.
Oh my gosh. Vampire fangs, man. Someone was talking about how it was just the slowest dialogue of like, there's like three words per subtitle, right?
Yeah.
Let this be the day that Klingons finally attack the Federation. Like, oh God. Oh. Please don't cut to another commercial with Verizon with Thomas Middleditch. I can't watch it.
Oh, no. Not another Geico commercial.
Oh, the Geico commercial. These are on the CBS. You've all seen these if you have limited commercials. Oh, man.
I guess. I mean, I don't know if they specifically, you know, gear these ads around the age of the person who signs up for the service or something, because we got all those medication commercials, but people, you know,
I got Levitra, I got Cialis. It's weird, man.
Tomorrow. Can we just do this tomorrow?
How could they know? How would they know how to target us? I mean,
well, because whoever signed up for the
spores.
Account that we,
spores.
Yeah. The spores know. Yeah.
We can look at you anywhere with the spores. Oh my God. What commercial did you see, Jason? Did you see anything?
I did. I'm trying to remember. They were different from last week, but I might have seen the Thomas Middleditch commercial.
I saw Thor like 15 times.
Oh, I didn't. Thor? I did not see Thor.
Wow,
yeah.
I didn't see that at all.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they're targeted for me. Oh my God.
They know where it is, the spores. They know who we are.
Jesus.
CBS All Spore Access.
Spores everywhere. This is terrifying. So if you're listening to this podcast this far out, know that despite our reservations, nitpicking here, I enjoyed this episode and I'm going to watch more.
Yeah.
We're going to keep going.
I agree.
I agree.
I mean, although the recitation of Through the Looking Glass was a little too much. But this is the kind of stuff we do. We pick this stuff apart so that you can enjoy the rest of it.
So we
see?
Yes.
But what do you feel most people's opinions is? Because I have a couple friends that are just like, it's the greatest. Oh, my God.
Well, the first two episodes I went on Reddit and people were very mixed. It was like 70-30 dislike to like. Tonight I went on Reddit and it's like 95% love. Love, love, love.
This episode or just the whole
thing? This episode. People are like, this should be the pilot. We love it. Everything's great.
Well, as you pointed out, if they started with this episode and we didn't need the first two, it would have been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It would have been a whole different situation. I think if I were to watch this,
could have flashed back a couple times to her mutiny and find out what it was all about, and we didn't have to have two whole episodes about it.
I would have loved that. If they would have taken this episode right now and made it a two-parter where they're splitting it up and flashing back to what happened on the Shenzo. That would be great. That would be so much better than her walking around the desert making a, you know, Starfleet insignia. I mean, we don't care about that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's good. Disappointed people those first two episodes. Like, oh, is this what it's going to be?
Yeah. So maybe I would have liked this better. I mean, I still liked a lot, but I just want a little more positive. So that brings us to... The Orville. So we episode 4 aired. What was it called again, Kim?
Oh, crap.
Twice, Doctor.
And the stars shall appear. Something
and
like
the stars shall appear.
Shoot.
Everyone, quickly, look it up.
I'm trying.
Look it up at once.
it's episode 4.
If the stars should appear. If the
stars should appear, by Ralph Waldo Emerson, is that correct?
If the stars should appear,
that's the correct name. That was
the funniest line in the whole episode. yes, Henry Thoreau.
So, what do we think about this? I know we shouldn't be talking about this, but I want to hear you guys' opinions.
I agree with you that the torture scene was a bit much. But I enjoyed seeing Rob Nepper, veteran of Next Generation, season 1 episode. Remember, he was Deanna's arranged marriage future husband.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
But again, For the World is Hollow.
He's amazing. I love him. He's terrific. He was on Prison Break on Fox for years, too. Yeah. There was like the Fox All-Stars. The casting director for Fox must have had a bunch of people on. Penny Johnson-Gerald. Who's the ship's doctor. She was on 24, and so was the guy with the white hair who they walked across the bridge. He was like Jack Bauer's supervisor on 24.
And holy crap, Liam freaking Neeson.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That was kind of they were saving that for the end, the big reveal.
I was like,
well, he should be revered as kind of the Jesus character for that planet.
It's not a hard sell for him. I want you to play Space Jesus. Like, okay.
All right.
But Jason, you've never seen an episode of Next Generation that much. I've seen
a couple of choice ones that you've shown me.
Yes. You've seen Conspiracy. So,
yes, I have seen Conspiracy.
Excellent.
And A Fistful of Datas.
A Fistful of
Datas. I forgot you watched that. Yeah. Oh, you saw Casino Royale too, didn't you?
I might have. Which one was the one?
Did we make you watch that one? I know we had a podcast about it.
I don't think we made him watch that one.
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, yeah, well, you saved you from that one. But we might have soured the milk on you for this. So what's your...
Well, I also should point out, too, I mentioned Penny Johnson-Gerald. It's kind of funny that it's only coming up now, and I haven't name dropped this before, but she was actually one of my high school teachers.
What?
I went at the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. This is, you know, circa 1987 or something like that. And this is before Larry Sanders, before she kind of made a name for herself. She was teaching acting at this high school, and she was movement teacher, and she was also a tough teacher.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Super tough.
Why are you burying the lead on this, Jason?
Because I'm watching the show tonight, and I'm like, oh, my God. First of all, I had to, like, confirm in my mind, that's her, isn't it? And then I looked it up. Yeah, sure enough, she taught at LAXA. And then I realized that I didn't mention it for some reason. That was kind of weird.
Wow. So she was your teacher. What did she teach?
She taught movement, and it was a huge workout. I remember there was one class where she had us, like, holding our arms out straight for, like, 15 minutes, and we're all dying. but she was a great teacher. She was really tough.
Yeah, I remember.
We got to get her on the show because she, Jason, she was also on Deep Space Nine.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was Benjamin Sisko's girlfriend slash wife eventually.
Yeah.
I don't think I think they got married. But yeah, she was great. She was great on that show. But she was always a recurring. Like, I know they were like, would you be a series regular? And she's like, no, I don't think so. Because she just knew. She was like, I'm better than this. And she kind of was, you know?
Yeah.
Always, like, every time she showed up, it was like, oh, good. Oh, we like her. And then she would, like, leave for, like, 10 more episodes.
Oh, but I had no idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm sure Seth MacFarlane cast her because, you know, being such a big Star Trek fan, he's like, oh, let's get her.
Oh, I'm sure.
So anyway, so what was your overall take on this episode?
I guess I didn't love it. I guess I'm looking at sort of the seams of the episode instead of just sitting down and enjoying it. I'm looking at it as like, okay, this reminds me of even the original series episodes. Where they're coming in, finding a planet that's, you know, it reminded me of a little bit of Red Hour when they show up in the town. It reminded me a little bit of what's the one where I'm blanking. But anyway, I just got the sense that I've seen this before, and it's not adding anything totally new and original to it. You'll have to refresh my memory, too, even though I just watched it a couple hours ago.
Let's focus.
Yeah, it was okay. I know. I think Mike liked it a lot better than I did.
Well, Kim, what do you think? Because you're 100% right, Jason. It is completely beholden to several Star Trek episodes. But yeah. Kim, what was your thoughts about this watching it?
I enjoyed it. Again, it was fairly serious for most of it. Mm-hmm. Like, what's her name? The security girl getting shot. Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Surprising the amount of blood I wasn't expecting. But I enjoyed it. I completely knew what would happen, of course. We've seen this in several iterations in Star Trek, in Next Generation and stuff. But I still appreciate it in little bits of humor. Of course, that bit that we saw in the preview back at Comic-Con when the helmsman destroys that ship and you're like, yeah, bitch. Like, oh, that's where that scene was.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and they also had the, I think the, you know, I'm going to torture you more. Like, oh, I've been married, you know, it's, you can't do anything to me. And then he tortures her a lot, which is very much a misstep. I did enjoy this. Like, and Jason, when you see For the World is Hollow and I've Touched the Sky, you're going to be like, what the hell? They stole this completely from this obvious Star Trek original series third season episode, which the only cool thing about it is that they live in this big hollow asteroid.
Oh, okay.
It's basically kind of...
Everyone inside doesn't know it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Yonada. Yeah, it's like... I don't know why I remember that, but I do... but you know what? There's something, again, maybe because they're outside walking around. It was nice.
A very sunny mood.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you guys
about...
exercise. I was going to ask you about the previous week's episode, which I was a little late. I saw a couple days ago. But it almost looked like they were out of Vasquez Rocks at a certain point.
Oh, I was hoping it wasn't, though. I was really hoping it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we have no confirmation on that. I figured Mike would know.
Which one was that?
About a girl...
About a girl.
Yeah.
They were down on a planet and around the rocks at some point. I was like, oh, I wonder if that's Vasquez Rocks.
I don't think it was as I was looking, but I'll have to go back and check. I'm almost certain they'll go around Vasquez Rocks. I know that they shot one of those scenes with the dance off with the bandits on top of the church.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They're like further down the 14 in Antelope Valley, in California, United States. There is a
Earth,
solar system. There's a train station, which looks a lot like a Spanish mission. So I think they just redecorated that. Hmm. I did enjoy this. I know it's not that good. I know it's a ripoff of a bunch of Star Trek episodes. I know Seth MacFarlane is terrible as far as being the captain, and his jokes are so bad.
Yeah, they are. They're really bad.
God. God, those dick jokes. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they didn't even pay it off. They didn't be like, we're all dicks. That should have been something, you know? It's like, that should have been the last part of the scene. It's like, thank you, you know, Captain, whatever your name is. We consider you a dick, and we will all be dicks. That'd be funny,
yeah,
right?
You know what? You're absolutely right. Yeah. Because the only you know, callback to that was when the robot guy was like, it's a compliment.
Yeah. And then, like, kind of, they all heard that. Bad. And but we didn't, maybe they didn't make the cutting room floor, but it's so comfortable for me. It makes me feel like, oh, I'm 30 years back. And we should say, Kim and I were in Los Angeles a couple days ago, and we saw a guy. Kim, what was he wearing?
Oh, a t-shirt that said, there are four lights.
Yes. which is from Chain of Command, or Chains of Command. I can't remember which one it is. And we were like, hey, nice shirt. And he's like, oh, well, today's the 30th anniversary of Next Generation. I was like, oh, my God. We totally missed that. We did the 50th, like, wow, a whole year. And the 30th of the Next Generation is like, this guy's wearing a shirt, you know? he's the parade. He's going to walk down Sunset Boulevard and wave to everybody.
Well, I happen to know it was the anniversary because of our friend Dan Merle's video that he came out with over at Screen Junkies, the honest trailer for Star Trek Next Generation, which I thought was very funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I still haven't watched that, but
Dan Merle is
a very big fan.
It's very funny. Apparently, he and his girlfriend watched every episode of Next Generation and took notes, copious notes, as to what things happened, and that it all ends up in the video as much as possible. They had to edit a lot out because I think the first cut was like 20 minutes long or something, 30 minutes long.
Oh,
but,
wow.
It's really funny. You should check it out.
Okay. So we'll talk about that some other day. We'll have Kim and I will gather a couple of TNG fans.
Yeah.
We'll actually go through this and do the 30th anniversary, because that is something big. I think part of the reason why no one remembers it, excuse me, we'll edit that out, I promise you, for the 30th anniversary of this. But I think the reason people don't remember the 30th anniversary of Next Generation is because people didn't watch it when they started out. It was such a soft start. And I don't recall really being invested in the show until third season, fourth season, you know, like when they did the cliffhanger and they came back after the Best of Both Worlds. Mm-hmm. So I think people just kind of have like a fuzzy memory of when this started.
We dropped the ball years ago.
We dropped the ball. We're sorry. I'm sure Trek FM has like 50 podcasts about
it. They'll charge you $90 to hear it.
Terrible. But to wrap up the Orville,
so you like
great...
that? Really? I thought you liked the ending and how positive it was. And we will send people to teach you how to use your ship.
that's all boilerplate nonsense. I just like the feeling I got for the first half of the episode where the mystery is unfolding.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just so above board. It's like, well, you go over there and you go over there and we're going to figure out this mystery. Dup, 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 dup. You know, it's so, it's such a nostalgic.
Contained episode, not as, here is a 12 season arc.
Yeah.
Well, it is. Yeah. It's easily kind of resolved at the end. I mean, I think it was a little too easily resolved. They really, that line you were just mentioning where he came about and was like, oh, we're just going to fix all this. You'll be fine. See you later. And the trip takes off.
That's so, yeah. It's so Star Trek, though.
Yes, it is. It really is.
Fly away.
It was very Star Trek-y. The second half of the episode didn't work. I mean, like the whole, first of all, like, some people live in log cabins. Some people are driving strange Humvees. Like, what is that? And then this, like, guy is just beating the shit out of this girl. Where are your friends? You know, I was like, what? You know, and then injecting her. It's they have that, like, you know, the following is, you know, TV MA because it's got violence and language. And it's like, you didn't need any of that. No.
Your kids?
I did. I watched it with Kiernan. He liked it. He
didn't mind the violent part.
I think he noted it. I think he was like,
not cool.
From a technical standpoint, I guess I'd have to go watch it again. It felt like the second time that the guy punches her and that they end the scene on it, I think it was the same exact shot from before. They just used it again. It's the same exact angle. I could be wrong, but I'll have to watch again.
Hey, can you go ahead and replay that punch one more time?
Yeah, just let's have to punch one more time.
I don't want to make sure she gets really, really beat up. You know, it's like, what?
God.
And then the end, when they open up the big space doors, first of all, everyone would be losing their shit big time, right?
Because
the sky is opening up, time to kill each other.
Reminded me of your eclipse journey.
Yeah. I mean, that was just the sun being blotted out, man. If a giant face suddenly appeared in the sky, I would kill everyone nearby. And I'd be like, you're all going to die because this is my God. If the sky was suddenly breaking. And then that bad guy just kind of looks at the sky and is like, all right, I guess I won't be evil anymore. You know, with no resolution to that. It's like, oh, all right, good. Let's go. Let's just go home. It's interesting, as we keep on talking about, these shows are taking very different tracks. One very dark, very serialized. One very light and very episodic.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's kind of a nice little balance to watch them both.
It's sort of a second golden age of Star Trek. I figured out. It's not the golden age. It's the second golden age.
Well, I think one's very much an homage. I mean, Seth MacFarlane is really an homage to the original series and to Next Gen, especially. Discovery is more trying to push Star Trek in a different direction completely and make it for the next generation of viewers. I think they're leading into two different, very different directions.
Here's what I'll say. I will predict that this season will end and then they will do either a complete rebooting with a new story. What's that?
Of which show are you talking about?
Oh, Discovery. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Discovery, that they will move back to a more kinder, gentler Federation after this season. That's my
really
prediction. Yeah.
Hmm.
I think in this, because science fiction loves to not only reflect but also reflect either positive or negative, depending on where the society is. And I think there's so much of a fractured nature in our own society. That to present a positive image of the future is what people are yearning for.
Mm. Yeah.
When the society is going quote unquote well and people are doing well, they want to see more of that dystopian apocalyptic. Because it's like, ooh, I have the resources to dream about something that's not as good as what I have. But right now, people want something a little more uplifting.
So this show supposedly is pre-TOS. Does that mean when this series eventually ends that it's still going to have the Klingons at war with the Federation?
I don't know. I don't know when the war ended.
No end to this war.
I don't know when the war ends, but we'll figure that out. We'll figure that out. Don't worry about that.
They'll have tribbles, though, and fortune cookies.
They do have tribbles and fortune cookies, so that's a good thing. We are on board. And he has that weird desk that he stands behind, and he kind of, asks you
standing desk.
Questions.
It's trivia.
Standing desk.
All right, let's put a cap on this. This was a great episode. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe someplace.
Yellow pad.
On a yellow notepad, please like, comment, and subscribe. Make sure it's a legal notepad.
Mail it to Twitter at my.
Mail it to Twitter. Oh, and here's the good news, bad news is that remember how I plugged that space rock run last week?
Mm-hmm.
So I was having second thoughts about that because, I think I'm out of shape.
Oh.
I think I can't do this. And
the 5K part.
Well, I did. I still think I'm out of shape for that. I still my God.
You could do it.
And then all of a sudden I saw on their website, they tagged me and it's like, Mike McCafferty, if I just want to talk about Star Trek, will be joining us in the morning.
No.
Big shout out to him mentioning us on the podcast. I'm like, oh no.
Well,
did they hear your shout out?
Training.
I guess they
I'm
did.
Doing some trail. I don't know what it is. Go to some website, put in some code and it's fine.
It says Big thank you to Mike McCafferty for featuring the Space Rock Trail Race on the I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek podcast. Mike will be dressed up as Captain Kirk when running the race. Like, oh, shit. Oh, God.
You and your big mouth. That's great.
So when is this race?
It's like the 15th. It's like in 13 days.
That's hilarious. I was going to say you should just start training with Chrissy. She's running a half marathon on like the 27th or something like that.
Well, there's a half marathon there, too. There's like a 5K, a 10K, and a 20K. So, yeah.
So are you still going to do it?
Yeah, I'm going to do
it. Have to.
Yeah. Well, I feel... first of all, it's at 7 in the morning.
Dress my wife in a Captain Kirk shirt, and she'll go do it, and just pretend it was you.
That's true. She'll be like, I'm Mike McCafferty. No, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. So if you decide to go to the Space Rock Race in 2 weeks.
Well, I think I've decided to go to the Space Rock Race now. Just as a viewer.
If you go, bring your defibrillation kit.
Yes, please.
Bring oxygen, water.
It's also hilly, too. That's the thing. I was like, I could do this. It's like, oh, God. Oh,
just walk. Rocks. Walk and run. Walk and run.
Yeah, maybe. I think I'm going to have like a little Bluetooth speaker on me that's going to play the fight music the whole time. A loop.
Bring your postcards.
I'll bring my postcards, pass them out as I'm going.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So make sure you show up at that and laugh at me as I'm dying.
It'll be fine.
I guess so. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. It has been
before
a pleasure.
We go, you want to? Is there another plug for that Space Rock Run? The code? You have the promo code finally?
Talk Trek, I think. Yeah, Talk Trek. So go register in the promo code, type in Talk Trek.
SpaceRockTrailRace.com?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm going to look this up right now.
I guess so.
Space Trail Rock Race? Space
well,
rock?
It's like a weird long thing. Just type in Space Rock. Space Rock Race.
Okay.
And it'll show up. And then type in Talk Trek as far as your registration. You get 10% off. It's totally worth it. Yeah. Well, you don't have to do it, Kim.
I mean, found it. It is. I have the website here. It is spacerocktrailrace.com.
My God. These people should be so happy with us for all the real estate we're wasting on this.
spacerocktrailrace.com. Yeah. Promo code TalkTrek.
TalkTrek, yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Always good to go out on a real strong note, right? A long... It's kind of crashing in the podcast, a long URL for people to listen to. Hour and 12 minutes into it. Thank you so much, everyone. It's all right. That's it. This is great. Episode 3, episode 4. We're doing this. We love it. We love you. I love
we
me.
We do? Okay.
Yeah, we love him.
Mike loves himself, everyone.
I do.
We can all sleep well.
And we also met a Star Trek a friend of the pod. Who was it? She showed up at the Star Trek thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What was her name?
Way to end on a strong note. It's a very vague reference to someone.
Does she
know the Star Trek thing? What Star Trek thing are you talking about?
When we went to go see the first
that
episode
horrible bar.
At the Hyperion.
Oh, at the bar. Okay.
Something.
You complain to Jason, and then you do it yourself.
We're going to end on a high note.
Yuzinia.
Spores. Good night,
Yuzinia.
Everyone.
Yuzinia. Okay.
That's not her first and last name. It's just Yuzinia, I think.
Yuzinia.
Yuzinia. This one goes out to you. All right. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm Kim Miller.
And I'm Jason McCarris.
And I just want to talk about...
Star Trek!
Sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand?
Anything but this.
When the train comes in, everybody rides.
Your daddy can put them up, can't he?
Rock a sober, emotional state.
I just want to talk about Star Trek live podcast. People can tune in, get some live audience questions.
Yeah, next week we'll do it.
Sure.
Next week.
If anyone's up at, what time is it on the East Coast right now? 2 a.m.?
2 a.m. Tony's asleep, so it's all useless. But we tried.
Yeah.
Ew!
That's what counts.
That hideous picture you put up.
What hideous picture? Oh.
What hideous
picture? Your face that? Froze yeah. like that as you went out to get the French fries.
What?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That's your fry that. Face.
Hideous. Take that off.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
And it might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you fuck